to hear from Washington correspondent for the Kansas City Star, Lindsey Wise, who's been covering the Brownback nomination saga that really started back in July. And Dave, do we have her?
Yeah.
Hello, Lindsey.
Yes.
There you are. Awesome. Great to have you in. This is Lindsey Wise, a Washington correspondent for the Kansas City Star. And I believe you're probably calling this from Washington, right?
Yes, I am, from the Washington Bureau of the Star and the other McClatchy newspapers.
All right. Well, I don't even think I can say it was quite a week for you. It's been quite a, 6 months or so, something like that, since the nomination was first announced in July.
Yeah, actually, it goes back even farther. We started hearing rumblings that Sam Brownback might get a job in the Trump administration, you know, almost immediately after Trump won. So we've been tracking this for about a year now.
And how has this week been like? I've been following you on Twitter for quite a while now, and you and your colleagues done a great job of updating everyone on this. And if you want to follow Lindsey, it's just at Lindsey Wise, LindsayWise, Wise like it sounds. How has this week been? Have you got any sleep, any rest?
A little bit of sleep. I've got small kids, so it's kind of like, you know, hard under even good circumstances. But I think that this week has been, you know, a big one for people who cover Kansas politics. I mean, it's the end of an era in a lot of ways. In some ways, my colleagues in Topeka who've covered him for years, I mean, it's an even bigger transition for them. I've still got the same delegations here that I've had for a while. But, it's been a really big story for Kansas. And even nationally, people have been paying attention to Sam Brownback because of his role in sort of evangelizing for Republican policies and tax cut policies in particular. So his whole arc and trajectory from like a rising star in the Republican Party to really, and at one point he was a presidential hopeful, to someone that in a lot of ways has kind of become a political kryptonite in Washington and in Kansas as well. And that's been interesting to watch as someone who watches politics, but also as someone who, you know, is paying attention to what's happening back in Topeka as well.
Did you think that nomination process would be the roller coaster it's been? Because usually it's not like that with these nominations. Usually they're pretty cut and dry, aren't they?
Yeah, I'll tell you honestly, I don't think anyone expected it to be as close as it was. I mean, I include even people on Brownback's team who were following the vote. And the delegations for Kansas. I don't know what Pat Roberts told you, but I did. Excuse me. I did talk to him as he was heading in for the vote, and I asked him, you know, how do you think it's going to go? And he said, you know, will Brownback win? And he said, I sure hope so. But there was a lot. You know, it was pretty calm on the floor when the vote was happening, and I think it was one of those things where it just so slowly dawned on those of us who were watching in the press gallery. That there were two Republican senators missing. John McCain from Arizona is receiving treatment for cancer, so he was not available to vote. And Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee was overseas at Davos, and he's also a supporter of Sam Brownback. So, you know, under normal circumstances, now there are 51 Republicans in the Senate. And because the rules were changed under Harry Reid about the number of votes you needed to get over this procedural hurdle and you know, get a confirmation for an executive nominee, Sam only needed a majority of senators voting. But as it turned out, there were only 98 senators voting. And so we were scrambling. At first, I was the only one watching the nomination because everyone thought it would just go pretty smoothly. And then everyone was sort of scrambling to try and count votes who had already voted. And, you know, I mean, basically the senators just come up and put a thumbs up or a thumbs down or say aye or nay. And it's hard to keep track when it's all kind of happening at once. So we have these cards where we write down, you know, yes votes and no votes, and everyone was counting up, like, how many people are left to vote, and has that senator voted, has this senator voted? And eventually we figured out that, you know, there were only a few senators left to vote, but it wasn't enough to get them to 50. So that's when it, you know, everyone started asking, where's Pence? Is he back from overseas? And soon enough, we heard that Pence was on his way.
That's really interesting that Democrat Harry Reid was so responsible for, in the long run, responsible for Brownback being able to get that ambassador post. What's been kind of the immediate reaction from what you hear in your circles from Topeka on this nomination?
You know, I think that when it, I think it was it long expected that people thought that, you know, there was a good chance that, that Sam Brownback would be looking for an exit ramp or that his friends might be looking for an exit ramp for him. Again, like I said, we started hearing rumors about that, you know, his name being floated for various posts. I think one of the first ones we heard was actually Agriculture Secretary, and that did not come to pass. But pretty quickly, we kind of narrowed down to this one, and I think we were able to confirm, I can't remember exactly when it was, but pretty early on that, that he was being screened for the job by the State Department. And I think that as soon as that news broke, it became pretty clear that I think people in Topeka were sort of looking ahead and ready to move on beyond the Brownback era, even members of his own party. And they've got an election this year, and I know that, you know, for the governorship, and I know there was a certain element even among Republicans who were concerned that if Brownback didn't move on, that it wouldn't give enough runway to Jeff Collier to establish himself as separate from Brownback's legacy and kind of establish himself as someone who wasn't just Brownback's, you know, sidekick. As he's running for his own, to be a governor in his own right.
And I do want to get to Collier in just a moment, but before that, when it comes to this ambassadorship, this at large for international religious freedom, as far as Brownback's duties, what exactly are those going to be? Does he even know? I've read a few quotes from him, and it didn't seem like he knew specifically exactly what he was going to be doing. I was just kind of wondering what the timeline or list of duties is there.
Yeah, it's my understanding that this is a position that is reports to the Secretary of State, so that would be Tillerson. And there was a funny rumor for a while that Mike Pompeo might be promoted to Secretary of State, so that was kind of interesting to imagine that Brownback might be reporting to Pompeo, but that has not come to pass. So he'll be reporting to the Secretary of State. He'll have a small staff, a relatively small staff. I believe it was something like, I don't have an exact number, but we're talking, you know, counting on two hands, I believe. I don't think it's a big office, but I could be wrong about that. It was hard for me to pin down exactly how big the staff size was. There was legislation passed fairly recently that was trying to elevate the importance of this position and increase the budget, so that actually the number of staff could be in flux. But there was, there's also a report that they will be responsible, that office will be responsible for. I believe it's an annual report that is looking at issues of prosecution and persecution overseas of religious minorities, and bringing that report to the attention of the Secretary of State. So he'll, you know, he might testify on Capitol Hill about some of these issues. He might, travel overseas and, you know, take a look, a firsthand look at, you know, say the plight of the Rohingya Muslims, you know, in Myanmar, or you know, the plight of Christians in Middle Eastern countries, or, you know, I don't know what his exact, you know, focus will be, but I imagine he will probably do some travel and be responsible for making sure this report and the concerns that he flags overseas for religious minorities get attention from the Secretary of State and hopefully the President.
Lindsay Wise with us, Washington correspondent with the Kansas City Star, and just got a few minutes with you, Lindsay, and just kind of to wrap up here, looking at Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier, who I believe next Wednesday, some point in middle of next week, he will be sworn in as the next governor of Kansas, and I guess talk a little bit maybe about what you know of Collier, what his profile is, and he's really kind of in a unique position with just really a few months slated to be governor before he has to worry about re-election, and there's a lot of things there when you look at the state's budget woes, the school financing issue that's going to be in the spotlight before the November elections. Quite a spot for him.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, obviously what folks probably know about Collier, if they know anything, is that he is a plastic surgeon from Johnson County. He is going to be the 47th governor of Kansas. And I think that, you know, it will be the thing everyone will be watching, especially in Topeka at the legislature, is to see if he is able to kind of mend some of the fences that and some of the sort of hard feelings that have been left during some of the conflict in the legislature when Brownback was there over his tax packages and some of his policies. And I think that there, you know, as we know, I mean, I think my colleague Brian, when he was reporting on the Brownback confirmation vote, spoke to a Republican, you know, spoke to many Republicans who are critical of Brownback and his policies. And I remember he told me one of them said, you know, that they thought he was the worst governor in Kansas history. And I think that there was also some hope expressed by both Republicans and Democrats that maybe Collier would be able to kind of move past some of that and work more, I guess, more in a more friendly fashion with the legislature. So we'll see. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate. A session that has a, you know, still a lot of the same problems that Brownback is leaving behind. You know, with funding and with all sorts, you know, the prisons and other things that folks are looking at to see if he'll be able to take a firm hand and you know, also smooth over some of the, I guess, you know, conflict that has been characterizing the legislature for the past few years, even within his own party.
Policy-wise, do you see many differences between him and Brownback?
You know, I don't know Collier very well because I'm based here in D.C., so I don't spend a lot of time in Topeka. I focus mostly on covering the Kansas and Missouri delegations in Washington, but I have met him once. But I do think that people are just, he's kind of a cipher to a certain extent. I think one of my colleagues, Steve Kraske, who you probably have heard, you know, you might know, he does a radio show in the Kansas City area. When he was writing for the Star, when Collier first, you know, became lieutenant governor, I believe he went to a Walmart and, like, asked people if they knew who he was, and, like, no one knew who he was. So there's a certain element of that might be changing now. It might have changed in the last few years or months. But I think he still has an opportunity to define his governorship as separate from Brownback's, even though he was Brownback's lieutenant governor. And so, you know, I think there's a certain open question there about how he'll be able to do that, especially, you know, he's only got a few months before he'll be in, you know, he'll basically be in full-blown, you know, campaign mode. And it's going to be a very competitive, it's a very crowded field for the governor race, and it's going to be a tough one. So he'll be trying to, you know, navigate the session while also, you know, probably fending off attacks from other Republicans who have an interest as they're running against him to be very critical and to tie him to Brownback. So I think he's going to have a tough job, and we'll just have to see how it goes, but it'll be kind of a trial by fire, and I think it'll be apparent pretty quickly, like, if he's able to handle it.
Really great insight information. Lindsay Wise, Washington correspondent for the Kansas City Star. Lindsay, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us. Hope we can do it again.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to do it anytime.
All right. Thanks so much, Lindsay. We come back on In Focus, Riley County Police Department. Brad Schoen is in studio with us. More on that after the break.
KMAN Morning News is presented by Strecker Nelson West Gallery.